And you are my witnesses to these things. This command, this indication of Christ comes at the very end of our gospel reading this morning. It is echoed in our first lesson in the book of Acts, of the Acts of the Apostles, when Peter is explaining to the crowd the nature of a miracle that's just occurred, and he points out to the crowds, hey, remember that guy Jesus? Yeah, you killed him. You abandoned the Holy One, and he was crucified, but he was raised on the third day, and we were witnesses to it. And therefore, in his name, forgiveness of sins has been declared and healing has been brought to this man. We see in the New Testament, particularly in the Gospels, the absolute importance of the place and role of the witness. The place of the witness. In fact, today, we are celebrating, we're observing the feast of our patron saint, Saint George. Now, his feast day is actually on April 23rd, but we've translated it to this Sunday, the third Sunday of Easter, in which the week in which it occurs. But George, we don't know a lot about him. We do know that he was a Roman soldier who served late in the third and early in the fourth century, likely in Palestine, that he became a Christian, and that during what historians called the Great Persecution, which was the final persecution of the Romans, which occurred in the year 303 AD under the Emperor Diocletian, it was a systemic and empire-wide persecution of Christians, that George was arrested and put to the test and held the faith and lost his life as a result of that. And if you look in your bulletin, don't look now, which you're reading during my sermon, but in your bulletin, I put an excerpt from our Like Stars Appearing book on the stained glass windows. It talks a little bit about George's story, and I'll let you read that later, maybe during the offertory or something. But we know for sure that George was a martyr. And it's no coincidence that the word that we use for martyr comes from the Greek word that meant witness. Martyros was a witness. It was used oftentimes in a legal sense, in a courtroom sense, that to give his witness cost him his life. Now we know that the world tends to not like witnesses, right? And we've seen the movies. Right? We're going to off this guy. Why? Because he saw what we did. So sometimes being a witness is a dangerous endeavor. So what I'd like to do this morning is talk to you a little bit about the absolute importance and understanding of the nature of a witness and what that means for us in our witness. What are the most popular television shows on the air these days? They're all crime dramas. CSI, CSI Miami, CSI New Orleans, CSI Cyber Division, Law and Order SVU, and so on, and so on. I actually, it's one of the few types of shows I don't really watch, but you can't escape them. They're on all the time. And we have this obsession with crime drama. And yet, ironically, in the face of this sort of cultural fixation on crime, I think in particular, but the legal system, the jurisprudence system in general, that we actually have lost significant touch with the role of witnesses. What's the best witness? Well, usually it's a person. We tend to think nowadays that the best witness is a video camera. But that how often does that work out well? Sometimes. I don't want to go down that road. What I want to say is this, that our legal system relies on and is built around the testimony and reliability of witnesses, right? But as a culture, we systemically and readily and naturally dismiss the role of witnesses, right? So that's the tension that we find ourselves in. And what is it that a witness does? What is the nature of a witness? Well, let me give you an example. Let me paint a picture for you. Imagine you're in a courtroom. There's the judge at the bench, and there's the witness stand, and the lawyer calls the witness, and he gets to the stand, and the lawyer says, "What can you tell us about the defendant?" He says, "Well, on such and such a day, at such and such a time, this person did such and such a thing." To which the lawyer responds, "And how do you know that?" "Well, because I really believe in my heart that he's guilty, and I'm pretty sure that he did all those things." "Ah, I see. And where were you when all these incidents happened?" "Well, I was at home playing Xbox, but I'm really sure in my heart that he's guilty." Now, any judge, jury, and courtroom worth their salt would do what to a witness like that? Right? But that's not how we work. We say, "Oh, he sincerely believes it, so it must be true." Never once noting that someone can be very sincerely wrong. What we need the witness to say is, "I can tell you all this guy did all those things on this day at this time because I was there." Ah, now you are a witness. Right? So what ends up happening is that the court, the defendant, and the jury have to now reckon with what the witness is testifying to. It is then the task, ideally, of the legal counsel to determine the reliability of the witness. Right? That's a separate issue. It's related, but distinct. First and foremost, the witness testifies to what they saw happen, and that has to be reckoned with, right? What our faith holds as central is that the apostles were witnesses to the resurrection. Not, "Wow, Peter, tell me what you did last weekend." "Well, you know, we are really sad that this Jesus guy is gone. But I really, in my heart, believe that he's alive." You really do believe that, don't you? Tell me more. Is that giving due course to their role as witnesses? Well, no, because they're not witnesses. And so what ends up happening is that in our day and age, faith and matters of our religion are reduced to personal intersubjective feeling rather than objective historical witness. Right? What ends up happening then if it's personal intersubjective experience or emotion, no one can touch that. It's the feely good feelings with which I feel them, and who am I to whatever. But if somebody in history says, "I was there and I saw this," at some point you have to deal with that. You have to reckon with it. Now, one of your reactions can be to choose to ignore it. You can do that. But sooner or later, you have to reckon with the voice of the witness. That is the nature of the witness. That is the identity, the role with which the apostles claim and to which Jesus commissioned them. Now, people can then rightly evaluate the reliability of the apostolic witness, as I think we all should. We're not going to get into that today, but suffice it to say that most people who cook up a story, like Jesus is alive, even though he really isn't and we know it, most people, if put to the test, and will not lay down their lives for something they know is a lie. So it's a very significant thing to note that all but one of the apostles died as martyrs. That's a pretty tough way to end for something that you knew was fake. Is Christ alive? Are you a Christian? Well, you know what? He's actually not. We kind of, you know how it goes. You're sad, and we were drinking wine, and we just thought it was a good idea. So can I go now? Right? We have to reckon with that. And the claim of the apostles' witness in history as objective. That's the nature of a witness to which George witnessed, to which the apostles witnessed. Now, what does all that mean? That's part one. Part two, let me say a little bit and then we'll be done. The part two is, what does that mean for you and me? In our collect for today, we talked about George holding fast to the faith when put to the test before the rulers of this world. And if you want to go and look at the collect now, you can go ahead and do that. You know, hold off on the reading the history bit, but look at the collect if you want to. I don't mind if your eyes go down at this point. Just they need to come back up when you don't. Still with me, okay. We pray that we too would be able to what? Give a reason for what we believe, right? To witness, as it were. Now we have to ask a very important question. You and I weren't there on that Easter morning to see the empty tomb, were we? And we've come thousands of years later, right? So in that sense, our witness is a little bit different from the apostles' witness. I can't stand before a judge and say, I was there on that Easter morning. Let's test the reliability of that witness for a moment. Right. That was 2,000 years ago, Ben. I'm going to have to rule your witnesses not reliable. Right? So do you see where this is going? So that means that our witness to Christ depends on what? On the witness of the apostles. And this has an incredibly significant dimension to how we share our faith. Because so very often when we talk about giving a reason for what I believe, quote, sharing our faith, what do we often think that to mean? How Jesus makes us feel. Or, I had this grand experience. Oh, I didn't. So that means I must not have a witness. Right? You can see how that confuses things. I didn't have this great conversion experience, so therefore I really don't have... You know, my life was going down the tubes, but then Jesus showed up, and now I feel better. Let me tell you about how much better I feel now. Right? That's not what we witness to. Peter, of all people, could have gotten up before the crowds in Jerusalem and said, I felt terrible. I was the first of the disciples of Jesus and I abandoned him. I denied him before everybody. And then Jesus came back and he reinstated me and now I feel great. And if you remember from John, when Jesus says to Peter, do you love me? Well, yes, I do. Do you love me? Yes, I do. Do you love me? You know I do. Then feed my sheep. Right? So when Peter gets up before the crowds, what does he tell them? He says, we saw an empty tomb, and therefore, I now have a reason to celebrate. Do you see the connection and the distinction between our joy and what is being witnessed to? So, here's what this means for us, that our witness to the world, friends, our neighbors, to the community, depends on the witness of the apostles. So the question that we have to ask ourselves then is, how well do we know the witness of the apostles? how well can we attest to what they claimed as part of our witness? That's very different from, this is how I feel today. And it saves us from a subjective witness. It causes those who hear it to now have to reckon with the witness of the apostles. Now, they may choose to ignore it. They may choose to be like, well, that's your thing, that's my thing. But sooner or later, there's a witness that has to be reckoned with. And that's what we are pointing the world to. Now, do our feelings and our emotions matter? Yes, they do. And if the risen Christ does not give us cause to rejoice because we are assured of our forgiveness of sins, then I don't know what will. But what we witness to, what we trust in, what we are staking our lives on, is not how we feel from one day to the next. Because if that's the case, we're all in trouble. What we are resting our hope on is the sure witness of the empty tomb and of the word of the apostles. And that we reckon with that, and the world must reckon with that. And so therefore, we then become witnesses to a world who sometimes doesn't want to hear what we have to say. Sometimes being a witness can be a dangerous proposition. But it is a message we testify to that we need to hear, and the world does indeed need to hear. Amen.